Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talk in Tech podcast, where we talk about technology, gadgets, trends, and other innovative products from the lens of a not-so-serious consumer. All right. So, hello, Setu. How are you?
I'm good, Amit. How have you been? It's been a while since we have done this.
It's been a while since we recorded the last episode. Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a crazy couple of months out here in India. I'm sure you've heard the news of what all has been happening out here. Just like a lot of folks out here, my entire family got impacted with the infection, and things just didn't settle in from there. So yeah, that's why I messaged you last week that probably as we move towards the mid of June, things are going to get more and more settled and we can start recording again. Yeah, but it's been such a long time. I feel really out of practice.
Yep. And I'm glad that, you and your family are okay. It's been a tough time, as I understand.
It has been a pretty crazy time, yeah. But let's get back to what we are here to discuss and what we are really, interested in more than this. I think these are things that probably our listeners have had enough of in the mainstream media anyways. So one thing that, Setu, I kind of observed through this pandemic, of course, the last phase of the pandemic, at least in India, has been severely harsh. We got through the first one pretty all right. But throughout this phase, staying at home, not doing much, and we did one more episode around pretty much the same topic, but gaming and video games have been an integral part of at least what I have done to settle down some of the anxiety of not being able to go out a lot, not being able to have fun in other ways. I'm guessing it has been the same with you, and especially because, when you are home, at least I see I'm able to find some dedicated time for gaming, unlike when I was regularly going to the office and, leading a more normal life. I think time for gaming was far lesser. Has that been a similar experience with you?
To a certain extent, not entirely. I mean, I've been trying to focus on some other stuff as well. Like, I got this Star Wars Lego set. The X-Wing, the Luke Skywalker X-Wing, by the way. So
okay.
I've been doing that for myself and a few other Legos. But yes, gaming has been part of it. I mean, I wasn't playing my Nintendo Switch that frequently. But in the last couple of months or so, I've been using it a lot more. So I know where you're coming from. It certainly has impacted our gaming routine, in different ways for different people. I talk with my friends here and everyone is saying that, they do see themselves gaming a little bit more. And some, as you said, yourself are seeing them gaming a lot more. So yeah, it has impacted different people in different way. And I'm glad there is one avenue where you can go and just, let all your stress out over there for that period of time. A lot of interesting things happening in the gaming industry, by the way. So let's just talk about those news.
Oh yeah, a ton of interesting stuff. Of course, last year was great in terms of new consoles coming in, both from PlayStation and Xbox. And I think we spoke about that in one of our episodes. This year, I think there's a ton of stuff that is coming in anyways. Xbox has this new partnership going on with Bethesda Games. And I'm expecting as the 20-year phenomena starts to roll in towards the end of the year, we should see a lot of stuff coming in from Microsoft and from Bethesda. And anybody who owns Xbox, keep looking out for it because there'll be some freebies and some cool stuff coming our way. And then anybody who owns a Nintendo Switch, just like you do, Setu, should look forward to what's coming up on the 15th of June, I think another week from now. So I'm reading about it a little bit, and I see that maybe the new Nintendo Switch Pro console might be something that's going to come in, and hopefully a lot more cool games for Nintendo Switch owners. So a lot of stuff's happening.
Yeah, I read about that too. I think there were a few Amazon listings. One was in India, another one was in France, I believe. that, you know, that were leaked for a few minutes or a few hours, and people just got in on the some of the specs and pricing for the new console. And I'm excited about that too. And as we discussed in one of our last episodes, I think I'm looking forward to that game you mentioned, Fall Guys, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the launch of that game on Nintendo Switch is also imminent. So a lot of things it to look forward to. Yeah. I wanted to talk about the Bethesda thing. Bethesda was primarily a PS5 studio, right? Like they were mainly focused on PlayStation games.
They were focused on PlayStation games, and they were an independent gaming organization for a very long time, I think. But I think the Microsoft, I've seen at least for the last few months or maybe an year or so, has been far more, far more accepting of cross-platform play, and far more accepting of getting more and more users to their platform. Because I think they obviously PlayStation is still ruling the roost when it comes to console gaming, and there is a market out there which is difficult to touch for any of the other consoles. And I think Microsoft, for that particular purpose, has been fairly open in getting more and more players onboarded. And getting more and more organizations on board. And I think Bethesda deal is part of that. But you're right. I mean, Bethesda was far more focused, just like any other gaming company would be, I think, unless it's an exclusive deal with Microsoft. I think most of the companies, in a legacy way, if you talk about it, have been primarily focused on PlayStation. And that's been, I think, for all Xbox users, it's been some sort of, you know, a complaint all this way that all cool games arrive on PlayStation first. I think that's something that we've seen through a large period in time.
Talking about cross-platform, there was a lot of news coming from Epic Games, right? So I wanted to talk to you about that as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So this let's just spend some time talking about the Epic Games versus Apple saga. I think anybody listening in would be interested in this. Anybody who's not following it closely might get a few, quick tidbits out of this particular episode. But it's been an interesting thing that's happening for almost a little over an year now. But the lawsuit kind of happened fairly recently, and there's been a lot of news around it. What we can do in this episode is, like, we can just rewind it a little bit and, you know, put things into a little bit of a context of why this is happening in the first place, right? But before we do that, let me ask you this, Setu. When you hear about Epic Games versus Apple, does it feel like a David versus Goliath story to you? Or does it feel like, you know, somebody small trying to take upon somebody so big as Apple?
No, I don't think it's the latter. I think it's the former for me. I mean, Epic is a pretty big company. I mean, compared to Apple, it might be small, but I mean, at least that's what my personal point of view is. And I'm interested to know. I mean, you know, I find it very interesting, and I'm intrigued by your point of view in terms of these things. So I want to talk to you about how it all started and things like that. So if we can rewind, then, you know, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I kind of, you know, after going through a lot of material around this topic, I also agree with you. It's not necessarily a David versus Goliath story, but somehow the entire narrative might come out as that, given the space Apple is in right now. And I mean, it's such a huge company offering so many services and controlling so many things for its customers. It's kind of inevitable that a story like this comes out as a small person versus a big person thing. But given that, let's just rewind it a little bit. Tim Sweeney, who's the CEO of Epic Games, has been one of the exceptional characters in the gaming industry, given that he comes from a small town. He started this company way, way back in a garage, just like, you know, many other successful companies start in a garage. And over a long period of time, there have been a lot of gaming labels associated with Epic Games. Epic Games, I think, was called something else earlier. I'm not clearly remembering the name right now. But Fortnite is what, you know, kind of landed them into the kind of popularity that we see right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Fortnite is not just a game. I mean, you've played Fortnite, right?
Yeah.
I've played Fortnite. It's not like I'm a huge, you know, player because I have such a backlog of other games also to play. So
yeah, same
Fortnite,
here.
Fortnite is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, it's not only a game. Kids play it, adults play it. It's played cross-platform across several consoles and across devices as well. And then it is like an urban legend of itself, right? Just like the Marvels and the DCs. Mm-hmm. It is not only the game, there is merchandise, there is concerts, there is meetups, there is a lot of other stuff that happens around Fortnite, given the huge fan following.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this happens with a game which is actually free. So if you look at Fortnite across platforms,
mm-hmm.
Fortnite is free. You don't have to pay any money to download Fortnite on any of the platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So the business model here is the in-app purchases.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with a lot of these games, they mm-hmm. don't you know make you pay upfront. What you do is you get inside the game, and then to kind of utilize the power of the game,
mm-hmm.
Which is various scenarios or skins or apparel or special weapons and stuff like this, you kind of pay. You do in-app mm-hmm. purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the business model that Fortnite and Epic Games makes money on.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem kind of started when this game became so popular, it got onboarded on iOS, and iOS has this what is called the walled garden. I think that's the word that everybody uses.
Mm-hmm.
Where they charge 30% of any purchase that is made from the App Store. And it's like a walled garden. So you have to make a purchase using the mechanism available within the App Store. You cannot go outside of it. And mm-hmm. You have to pay that 30% to Apple and keep the rest of it for yourself. So obviously, for a game like Epic, which is not, you know, there's no acquisition cost for a customer out there. Every time somebody is purchasing an in-app a new mod or new purchase, they are giving away 30% of the money straight to Apple. So I think that is.
So when you say, we can't go out, you mean that we need to use the payment mechanism, which is done via Apple's internal, you know, iTunes based payment or, you know, app based payments rather than.
Absolutely.
So we can't use any of our personal credit cards directly in the
that
game,
exactly
we
true.
have
yeah.
to use it via App Store, right?
Yeah, you have to go via App Store, just like with any other purchase that you make within the iOS ecosystem.
Yeah,
you have to go via the App Store, or there's the other option, of course, is to play it on the web, but that is a dumb option for any iOS user. They know that the experience of a app is far better than doing it on the mobile browsers of iOS or even on the iPad. It's a silly thing to do. That experience is never the same. And and it seems through this trial, and I'm, launching forward a little bit, it seems through mm-hmm. this trial, some of these secret things have come out. And one of the secret things that at least I read was that
mm-hmm.
this is all by design. Apple doesn't want users to go outside of their platform, and therefore mm-hmm. the web experience will never be at par as a native app experience, and they won't mm-hmm. ever let that happen. But that maybe we can talk about that a little later. So rewinding back, this is the problem that happened. Tim Sweeney has a reputation of being somebody who's very outspoken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has written about Apple's walled garden and the fact that it is discouraging developers and not giving them their fair due a lot more. But apparently the story goes that when they were about to launch it on iOS or a little bit ahead of that, a little bit after that, they mm-hmm. decided that this is not going to work for them. And mm-hmm. therefore, they are going to create an app update in which they allow the user to make a choice.
Okay.
That you can either use the Apple's payment methods, or here is an alternative where you mm-hmm. get charged less.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to use that, you can use that. So it's like a bi-directional payment system.
And from what I remember, I think they first reached out to Apple to let them
exactly.
do it.
Yeah.
And Apple denied it, right?
And Apple refused, of course. So Tim Cook refused immediately. given historically, I think Apple has refused all such requests. So I think what I would also say is that this is probably not the only time something like this has happened. This has happened a lot of times that people have complained against this, about this Apple's ecosystem. But this is the first time we are seeing it at the scale of Epic, what's happening at the scale with Epic Games. So that's the interesting bit around it. And that's where a lot of noise and a lot of news has picked up as well.
So let me play the devil's advocate. I mean, aren't they signing to agree to these conditions when they come on the App Store?
Oh, yes, they are. Absolutely. So Apple's take when eventually all of this happened, they actually dropped that update. And as soon as Apple realized that the update is bypassing their payment ecosystem, they banned the application on iOS Store. And suddenly, I think earlier in this year or late somewhere last year, the app suddenly disappeared from iOS. It caused a lot of noise at that point in time, but it was all deliberate. I think Epic Games knew that this is going to happen, but all of it was part of the plan of what we're seeing right now, where an actual lawsuit is progressing and one organization is trying to prove the other one to be more of a tyrant rather than anything else. I believe it's, at least the way I read it, it's all part of their plan. They obviously must have known that Apple is going to ban their application. But they took that risk. They took the risk of losing so many users so that in the long run, they can probably create a dent into the policies that Apple is Apple proceeds with regularly. So just to come back to your question, you're absolutely right. They would agree to that. And Apple, like all through this time, Apple has been saying the same thing that, you know, you agreed to our terms and conditions and you are free to move away from our App Store if you don't agree with them.
Okay. So this basically means that, as you said, I mean, all of that happened around that time, you know, Epic not agreeing to Apple's refusal to allow them and just posting that update, and then Apple basically removing the app from the App Store. And I think there was some relationship out of the, you know, because Epic also develops the Unreal Engine, they also, correct, I think, removed Unreal Engine, and that posed, yes, a threat to a bunch of other games. But I think that was reinstated because I think one of the judges ruled that, you know, that's unfair to other game developers. But all of that was a precursor to kind of get this trial rolling. Interesting. Okay, let's go on.
Yeah, and they actually named this Project Liberty, if I remember it right from one of my readings, that the Epic Games named this Project Liberty, and they kind of invested a lot of money in hiring the right set of lawyers for them to take up this particular case. So in a typical fashion, I think the interesting part about this is, in a typical fashion, the argument from one side, which is Epic Games' side, has been that this is not cool for developers. This is partial to Apple, this entire payment ecosystem. And even for consumers, there's no choice, right? If you want to offer something less, at a less cost to the consumers, because you can make that margin with a lesser cost, you cannot do that. You cannot offer that cost to the consumers also. So their argument is more on this side, whereas Apple's argument for majority of the time was, as you would expect, Setu, as somebody who's using iOS and Apple products for such a long time, it's all been about security and privacy. And the fact that, you know, there is a business model in place, but the business model is probably secondary. The primary thing is that we vet everything before it gets to the consumer, and we protect this walled garden so that our consumers are protected. That's been the primary argument that I saw for a very long period of time through this trial, at least from either sides.
Yeah. I think I understand where they're coming from. It is their design and operating philosophy for so long that they want their customers to have a really intuitive and safe and secure user experience, you know. And again, obviously, you know, from their point of view, they are the ones who determine what a safe, secure, and intuitive user experience is. They don't want probably their customers to determine that, as Epic would say. I see their events all the time. In all Apple events, they use the words very carefully. They say that we feel that our customers will like this. We feel that, you know, customers will love this. They never say that, you know, this is the best thing or this is the most amazing thing that you know anyone has developed. So I understand where they are coming from. Okay, so then what happened next?
So what happened next is a ton of things happened next. So lots of conversations. Like I said, each party for a very large period of time has been holding on to these arguments. And then a lot of interesting things have come out as an offshoot, right? So I'll just take a couple of instances over here because we can't discuss. I mean, I have followed only the interesting tidbits. I haven't followed the entire legal proceeding to the T. But things like Apple's insistence of getting that 30% cut and then the whole Roblox thing. Did you hear about that? Did you hear about the whole Roblox argument that came in, which was like super interesting for me?
There were a lot of silly arguments in that trial. I followed the Verge. I follow the Verge cast, which is the podcast from Verge. And they had this, I think, 2 or 3 episode series on this trial. So I listened to those series, and anyone who is interested and listening our podcast and want to know more details, I think The Verge has covered it amazingly. And I would encourage you to go and listen to that. But yeah, tell me about Roblox. I mean, honestly, I hadn't heard about the Roblox thing or the app before this trial. I think this trial made that app or whatever it is much more popular than it was.
Yeah, I think Roblox is one of those organizations that dates back even prior to the first iPhone launch, or even going back many years before that. But they recently launched their IPO, they went public, and so they have become a huge organization. Mm-hmm. But I think Epic Games lawyers came up with this argument that Roblox operates an app and sort of a store within the App Store themselves. So if you have you played Roblox, by the way? Have you played?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
So both my wife and my kid are big fans of a few games in Roblox, and they are very engaging. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And then it's again a mini sort of role-playing atmosphere that gets created with multiple kinds of games within it, where you can role-play and then you can play with other people around the world, create your own sort of house in some games, or just play with them one-on-one in some other games. So it's interesting. I mean, it's not something that you would say is very visually pleasing for real gamers, but it is very engaging. I think that's the whole point of it. And then their whole ecosystem is around letting their own developers create characters, games, and experiences. But again, there is an in-app purchase phenomena that happens there as well. And when Apple was asked this question, why do you let that particular ecosystem exist? Then I think Apple basically said that they are not a gaming company at all, or something like that. Some argument that sounded really silly to me, that we don't consider Roblox developers as gamers, and we as game developers, we consider them as something called experience developers.
Creators, or
something like that. Exactly. Yeah. And overnight, or in a little bit of time, I think Roblox itself went ahead and changed all the gaming references within their ecosystem to similar references that were being used in the argument, which was even more hilarious because it was like an after effect of what was going to happen or what was about to happen. So I found that really hilarious.
And then someone from Apple kind of changed it back, right? I that's what I heard on the podcast. Someone came, Phil Schiller or someone.
Yeah. So I think somebody went back on what was actually said earlier in the trial, that Roblox is not a gaming company at all. You're absolutely right. And then the second incident that I found really interesting was the comparison with the MacBook experience, with the whole Mac experience versus the iOS experience. And I found a lot of logic in there. And I'll love to hear your point of view because you use both extensively. So while this entire argument about we will control the experience for users because we know best for our users, it applies very nicely to iOS. Mac, as you would know, the Mac's ecosystem is far more flexible. And you are allowed to do whatever you want to do at the click of a button. You just have to say, allow this app to be installed outside of the App Store. and it lets you do that. And I think Epic Games also tried to use this argument that while on one side you are claiming that your users need an experience which you can only control, on the other side you have such a huge chunk of people who use your own products and your software where you let them do whatever you want to do. And I believe it was it Craig Federighi or was it
Eddie Q?
Eddie Q, who kind of, you know, said that it is used by developers, Mac is used by developers and by advanced users who need that kind of flexibility, and therefore it is provided that. But I thought that was a bit of a weak argument. And I think it was like, you know, a tail between the legs kind of an argument. I don't disagree with it. But I'm saying given the kind of devices that Apple is creating on their iOS platform, the iPad Pros and the super powerful systems that they are creating within the iOS platform, I found that argument a little bit weak. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Was it the same argument where they compared the Mac to a car or something? You know,
it is the same argument. Yes, exactly. Yeah, that was a great example. If you remember that, why don't you detail that out?
I think they said that Mac is kind of like a car, and think of it like a machine with metal all around you. You are basically sitting in a metallic object, taking it out in the world, and you know, anything can happen to you. I mean, you have to take care when you're driving. And I think in theory, it all made sense, but it was super hilarious because in a way they were saying that Mac is like really unsafe, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I think a lot of the tech journalism world kind of made a lot of fun about that argument. Even though, even when Mac is considered significantly safer than Windows, I think compared to iOS, right? I think even Apple knows and considers it unsafe. I don't know whether they want to make it as safe as iPhone or not. I think there are pros and cons to both. In my opinion, if you want to know my take, I think they should. It's high time they add a mode or something, or some sort of a profile setting or somewhere where you can say that, okay, I want to be a traditional Apple user where, you know, I don't want to make a lot of decisions. I just want safe decisions to be made by the system for me. And then, you know, something like an admin or a non-admin mode in Windows, I would say, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other mode is where you say that, no, I'm a power user or I'm a super user. I want to be in control of everything. So don't decide anything for me, and I am capable of making my own decisions. So something like that. I mean, I would probably prefer that, so that, you know, when members of my family are using it, you know, for my parents or for my kids, I would use the safe mode where, you know, before letting them install anything fishy or malicious, you know, it would either ping me or ask me, or just not let them do it, right? I would rather go that route. What are your thoughts on this, by the way?
No, I absolutely agree. And I think you have kind of hit the nail on the head, because Epic Games used a similar argument. Epic Games actually said that you cannot claim to be controlling your users on one end and then, you know, giving them the flexibility on the other end while claiming that the underlying layer is where the security is being balanced out and we are protecting you from it. So if you are protecting one set of users, protect the entire ecosystem. And if you are letting them be flexible on one ecosystem, why not let everybody be making that choice, right? It's like my choice, like you yourself said. It's my choice whether I want to play on the safe ground or I want to play on a ground with muddy puddles. So that was an argument that Epic used very nicely. And I do agree with that. While both of us enjoy the iOS ecosystem, although I'll put my hand on my heart and I say that it has too many bugs these days to call it a seamless experience. But yeah, I wouldn't mind that, you know. I see the other side of the story. But that is where kind of things get a little interesting. If you noticed, if you were following the last hearing where Tim Cook actually appeared.
Yeah.
I think the judge or the Epic Games lawyers actually asked them this particular question. And he did not talk about security. He did not talk about vulnerability. He did not talk about this walled garden. He said that that is our business model. That's how we make money. and we can actually not change that, because our argument is, I mean, whatever our arguments have been on the past, Tim Cook actually said that we want to continue doing this, and this is the right thing to do because this is our business model. So, which was a little bit of a surprise, because it kind of flipped everything from the security and the vulnerability issues that were being spoken of all this while.
Yeah, that was interesting to me too. I mean, it kind of, everyone spun it like he spilled the beans or something, but I found that to be like brutally honest. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it is their business model to start with, and maybe safety, security, you know, intuitiveness and all of that is a side effect of that business model, and that's why they chose to go with that business model. And I kind of appreciate them being honest about it and not, you know, beating around the bush. Although all the other executives from Apple were doing that. and when they called the CEO, you know, he kind of went straight on the point. And I think it tells you something about their philosophy and overall their guidance that, you know, I think they've had enough of that trial, in my opinion, I think, from their side of things. Hmm. I mean, they were spending millions of dollars, I guess, in defense lawyers. Interesting thing that I found was that you mentioned something about Epic spending a lot of money on their legal team and choosing the right legal team. What I found from the Vergecast was that Epic apparently had the same lawyers who defended American Express in a previous lawsuit for doing the exact opposite thing, right? So, yeah. So I think the lawyers that are handling Epic's side of the case in this trial are the same lawyers who kind of convinced the judges to have to let American Express have their monopoly. So wherever American Express is be used as an exclusive payment mechanism, then, you know, Amex didn't want any other credit card company like Visa or MasterCard to be allowed. And that was a trial that they won in favor of American Express. And now they're coming on the totally different side of the table trying to prove a point that, you know, all of these should be allowed. So that was kind of very interesting for me, for Epic to go with those lawyers. But overall, I felt that Tim Cook's testimony, I think, was fairly honest. It might have not been in overall in Apple's favor somehow, because, you know, nobody likes to hear a company say that we are doing this because we want to make more money, right?
Everyone
wants to hear fancy or rosy things like, you know, we are doing this to protect our customers and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, businesses exist to make money at the end of the day.
That's true.
I mean, I have an interesting take on this. I mean, if I look at it from Apple's standpoint, right, they said things like majority of the apps on the App Store are free, right? So somebody has to pay for the infrastructure and, you know, maintenance of those app updates and things like that. So some background here, right? I mean, when you submit an app to be listed on the App Store, it has to go through a rigorous review process. And that review process is a combination of, I presume, a code-based or an automated review process and a manual review process where somebody, you know, some person actually runs the app and make sure that, you know, it isn't fishy, it isn't malicious, it isn't trying to extract any information out of the consumer and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some other checks performed, like, you know, it isn't stealing your information and introducing any viruses and things like that. And all of that takes money, right? I mean, the review process would take money. Whatever they have developed, the code they have developed to review it automatically would require maintenance and it would have required some investment. So they need to recover that money somehow. So I think he was right in saying that this is their business model. They let their apps, they let the developers submit free apps for free because, you know, they are taking a cut from the in-app purchases or the paid apps, which are able to kind of sustain the whole ecosystem. And I think their argument is that, you know, you pay us for this, but then you have this other option that you can utilize. So you can potentially have a free app where people don't have to pay to download it. But when they actually pay to, as you said, buy specialized weapons or, you know, other characters or other merchandise within the app, or digital merchandise, by the way, so they are maybe paying a little extra. So the acquisition cost, as you said, is free.
Yeah.
But what is the in-app thing called? Is it called the retention cost or something? This is a business term for it, right? That might be a little higher. So
for an Apple ecosystem, I do totally get your point here. And I think I'm like, if I were to take my own take on all of this episode, I would actually agree with you, right? So Apple has been for enormous number of years now the place where large number of user base is sitting, and everybody wants to get to that user base. And for, you know, I just cannot figure out that Epic Games would have gone all this convoluted way to prove a point had they not known that they need that Apple user base to survive and to sort of, you know, acquire more customers and to be more popular as a gaming platform. So it is all driven out of business at the end of the day. It's not like Epic Games, even though whatever they are portraying, even though I think Tim Sweeney comes out as a far more lovable character given his background, I really doubt there is any ethics at play over here. It's primarily driven by business. They want that user base and they want the money as well. I don't think so. Like I said, I don't think it's driven out of anything but business. But on the other side, I do see the argument of choice, like I said earlier, being given to the user, not, of course, at the expense of security, because we have enjoyed that tremendous level of security and experience together on iOS platforms for a very long number of years now. And anybody who has used this, at least majority who has used this ecosystem and then tries to use something else, without any bias on my own end, I would say they would find it very difficult. Either ways, right? They would find it extremely difficult to operate anything else and probably spring back very quickly. So I would say that there is logic on both sides. At the end of the day, it is driven by business. I'm not here to take any sides, and I don't think it will benefit me at all as a gaming consumer either way. But I would like to see that level of choice being given to the end user in a way that doesn't compromise security. I think that would probably be the next level thing that Apple might actually, it might be inevitable for Apple to do it, given like I said, they want the iOS platform to expand into your lives in a way where you can use it as developer machines also.
Correct. And by the way, I think Google has the same policy. So Google takes the same 30% cut, Google Play Store, and it won't let you, it doesn't allow developers to have other payment mechanisms within the apps. I think, so it's just same across the two major mobile operating systems. The other thing is that, you know, I kind of...
But I think the exception with Google, Sethu, I would say, is that you can easily sideload an app in Google, which you cannot do in iOS, and there's just no way to circumvent anything in iOS. Whereas in the Android ecosystem, you can do that.
Yeah, you can just download an APK and just load it.
Exactly.
In your phone. Yeah,
exactly.
I also agree with your point of view in terms of what is inevitable for Apple. And I think, from my standpoint, I think a simple solution to this is to let developers mention that, you know, there are alternate payment mechanisms available, even if they don't let them offer them within the app on the App Store. Right now, I think they even restrict the developers to even mention that, you know, something like this exists. Yeah. So here's my point. Like, I am a super user or a power user or whatever you want to call, you know, me or and likes of us. But like, imagine my parents, right? Our parents or our kids. So they would, when they go to an in-app purchase screen or something, you know, they would see that, okay, you can buy it now. And then they, let's say Apple allows these developers to put in that information there that, you know, if you want to use alternate payment mechanisms, click this link. And then when you tap on that link or click on it, you know, it displays a warning, similar to how most websites these days display a warning that, you know, you're leaving the Apple's ecosystem and, you know, doing that's this right. on the web.
Yeah.
So it's at your risk or whatever. And then when you actually say confirm or something, then it takes you to that page where you can make that payment, right?
Yep.
Right now, Apple doesn't allow that at all. And I think that's something that they can start with. And I feel that, you know, that's incorrect because from a developer standpoint, right, they need to at least be able to let their customers know, right, that there is an alternate mechanism. At least the customers who might be interested in an alternate mechanism. Forget about security. I want to try different payment methods, you know.
Yep.
So, person like me or you would look at that, we would tap on it, we would go there, might as well save a few bucks and get our work done. But, you know, majority of Apple's consumers, I would say, would not even look at that message, probably.
I agree.
Then just tap, you know, buy now. So it's probably going to be a reasonable deal for both the parties to start with. I don't know where this is going to end. I agree with you, but that's something. And I have heard instances where, you know, they mine your app to kind of see if you have somehow mentioned something like this. For example, you know, an app like Netflix is not even able to mention that you can sign up for Netflix anywhere. Right. So that I feel is unreasonable from my point of view. Netflix or Spotify and all of these apps should be able to mention that, you know, if you want to sign up, go to web on this address and sign up.
Yeah. Right.
So
yeah, that's primarily the reason why, you know, I don't know how it is in US, but the Kindle Store app in India, it doesn't let you purchase anything from the app, which is like the stupidest experience that you can have as a user.
Yeah, it's the same here. Yeah.
It's the same reason, right? Amazon doesn't want to share revenue.
Correct. And from Amazon or Netflix or Spotify's point of view, right? I mean, if they say, you know, sign up now, or if they say, you know, or you can sign up there, most users would sign up now, right? And they would lose their revenue there. But, I mean, they don't have to say sign up now. They can just say that, you know, you can sign up there and then come back here to enjoy it. And, you know, and that might be something that Apple has a problem with. You know, they would say that, you know, if you give an option to sign up elsewhere, then you have to give an option to sign up using App Store as well.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting battle. And as I understand, I think it's not a jury trial, right? It's a judge trial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is not a jury trial. And I think all the arguments are done now. And what I heard last was that the verdict should be out somewhere mid of August. So we'll see what happens. And in any case, you know, right, how the legal system works. So whatever be the verdict, I think the other party is going to appeal, because now it's more a matter of reputation at stake as well.
Correct. And I think one of the things that Vergecast pointed out was that because it's probably going to go into an appeal, Epic wanted to get as much documentation in this trial as possible, because in an appeal, you can't add more evidence.
Yes. Yeah.
So there were discussions about every other thing here. And there were some silly discussions. There were some serious discussions, but there were a lot of things that were disclosed in this trial, you know, emails and conversations and things like that. But yeah, it was pretty interesting. And as I said, you know, the Vergecast has a detailed episode series on it, which might be very insightful for some. But overall, I think I'm interested to follow this. And I think let's talk about this more in our future episodes, you know, whenever there is some news, because I think this is an important juncture within the app ecosystem, because this trial is going to determine how the app stores and all these platforms eventually evolve.
Absolutely. Because, you know, if there is a judgment here, which is either way, I mean, whatever judgment comes either way, it will be held as a precedent for anything else that happens in the future. So, for example, if the ruling is with Apple and against Epic Games, I really doubt that this is ever going to come up again with such strength with any other organization in the future. So yeah, it's going to be a precedent, a big one.
Yep. All right.
I think that was a super interesting discussion, and something, like you said, both of us are really interested in. And I hope that our listeners would have gotten something interesting out of it. And like Setu said, if you want to follow more details, go on Vergecast. And of course, there's a ton of news out there as well.
All right.
All right, then. Take care until we meet next.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Talk and Tech podcast hosted by Amit Tripathi and me, Setu Garg. We would love to hear your comments and suggestions. Amit's Twitter handle is at unusualrant and mine is at Setu Garg. Music for the podcast is produced by Nomadic Lust. Cover art design is by Malvika Tiwari. You can find the link to the artist's pages and our Twitter handles in the episode's show notes. Until next time, take care and goodbye.